Hey, folks, in this interview, it's all about the myth of talent with my friend Iberian X Perillo.
This is Twit.
Hey, welcome back to This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, it's a deep discussion. We're going to be talking about talent, the lack thereof, how to get it, and the myth of it. And here to do that with me is my friend, Mr. Iberian X Perillo of the Candid Frame fame. What's going on, Iberian X? What's going on down there in L.A.?
Hey, man, it's nice and warm.
Is it hot or warm down there? It's hot up here.
And it's going to be hot.
Yeah.
Last year, it was like over 112 for about a week or something like that. So that's hot for me now.
Yeah, that's not conducive to human life.
Yeah, this is nice and comfortable now.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Stay indoors weather. That's in L.A. That's the weather when you go out at magic hour. You go enjoy that. All street photographers come out at magic hour and get their shots.
Yeah. Evenings are really nice when it's that hot, but during the day,
yeah,
you got to do stuff outside. It's a beast.
Yeah, I feel for the people that have to work outside in that mess because you can't sweat enough to stay cool. So, man, let's dive into this. And you've been on This Week in Photo many, many times, so I don't feel like we need to really dive into your history and who you are. If people haven't heard of you, they can go over to thecandidframe.com, right? And check out your amazing podcast where they can hear the sultry tones of Iberian X over there interviewing photographers about all things photography, street photography included, right?
Yeah, and then probably the local post office to see a poster up there.
Yeah, wanted. What? I wish I was wanted. You know, you need that. But you know, we were chatting before I started recording, and you sent me a note based on a note I sent to you about having you on the show, and you suggested doing an interview on talent or the myth of talent. And I wanted to just, you know, set the stage of that. What's the box that we're playing in here? Are we talking about, you know, how some people can get talent if they don't have it? It's a learned sort of thing, or that it's genetic. And if you don't have it, if you're not a virtuoso on the piano today, you're never going to be. Like, what's the box for us?
Well, that's it. Just that. Exactly. What is it?
Yeah.
Whether you have to naturally be born into it, or is it something that you can develop?
Mm-hmm.
It is just something that has been on the forefront of my mind recently, just because I've been working with several photographers who are in the early parts of their career. But because of the show, I've interviewed hundreds of people, some of whom have been, you know, considered legends in photography. So I felt like, you know, there are a lot of assumptions that are made about talent. And one of the things I often experience with people who I'm teaching is they question whether they have talent or not. And so it's just like, well, let's talk about what it is, what it isn't, and see if we can provide some people some insight that might prove helpful, regardless of where they are right now in their sort of photographic journeys.
Yeah, no, and that's perfect. That's kind of been on my mind, too, because it kind of goes down that path of, you know, what is art? What is fine art? You know, what is talent? What is not talent? Is it subjective? What is, you know, even pornography is porn. What is art? What is pornography? In the world of talent, you know, it's tough, right? Because some people will say, like I started off the discussion, some people will say, well, you know, there's a natural aptitude towards being able to, in the creative world, being able to see light, understanding light, seeing shadow, understanding the interplay between light and shadow, understanding colors and composition. Some people have that intrinsically in the back of their head. They understand it so they can spot a good shot, where other people would just be like, well, I don't see anything. What are you looking at? You know, so how do you get there, Iberian X? So is it, let's use that as a baseline. Do we agree that there are certain people that are born with a certain kind of innate talent in a certain area? Or is everyone a level blank slate and it depends on your life experiences and other factors to determine if you're creative or not?
I think there's like maybe 1% of or less that are actually savants, like Mozart or someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, some people, you know, argue the fact that that he put in more than his 10,000 hours because he was playing piano from a very, very young age. So I think that the way I look at it is that talent are certain qualities that you are born with, but not so much that you're talented to become a painter or a musician. You may have some inborn, skill isn't the right word.
Aptitude.
You may have some natural aptitude in some way, mm-hmm. that depending on the art, the craft, that you can leverage to your advantage as opposed to someone else. But I don't think that the possession of that aptitude makes the pool of people who are become talented photographers as finite a one as most people would think.
Yeah.
You know, like the reference people say, oh, he or she has a good eye. Mm-hmm. And that if you have that innate skill, then naturally you'll become sort of a better photographer. But as much as some people may have a good eye in whatever way you may choose to define that, I think that a way of seeing is something that can be developed, and that the other, you know, the ability to like be able to see color in a particular way or to see spatial relationships in a certain way, that may be an aspect of that good eye that that person may have, mm-hmm. or it may only be part of what's at play.
Yeah.
So I think that there are innate abilities that each of us have. And the challenge becomes finding a craft, an art, a vocation that leverages whatever those are. And then those of us who sort of are lucky enough to play in a variety of different, different areas, I think you tend to kind of discover what you have an affinity for. And then by practicing and repeating the process over and over again, you start to hone those, that tendency that you have. What was the word you came up with? It was
affinity, aptitude. Yeah.
You combine the affinity with the skills that you develop only from applying them and practicing them to a certain degree.
Yeah. That's interesting, but some people may have a head start beyond others just genetically, right? Like, for example, you know, there's certain people that can recite pi to 100 digits out, where other people can only recite it to 3 digits out, right? Yeah, I can get to 3.14, you know, but everything else, you know, but then that same person may not understand how to communicate, you know, in a podcast or something, right? So I don't know. So
who have the perfect pitch, you know, the people who have a perfect pitch when they sing and stuff like that, which is something I do not have.
Yeah, me either.
No, unless I'm in the shower, then it's just sweetness.
Yes, because there's the noise of the shower that's obscuring.
Right. So can that person with a perfect pitch apply that skill to something else other than music? I don't know. But it's probably something in the sciences that, you know, that apply to sound. So it's not necessarily that someone who has that, you know, has that affinity is only going to be able to utilize them in a particular finite way. I think there are a variety of different ways that you can use those strengths, those natural strengths, and if you can find something that favors them and something that you enjoy, I think it's great.
That's the rub right there, right? There's that Venn diagram of the stuff that you have a high aptitude towards doing, the stuff that you love doing, and then there's the stuff that will put food on the table, right? And how do you get to that middle piece of that? And I would argue that middle piece of it is the definition of happiness. You're doing something that you're good at, you love doing it, and it's putting Teslas in the driveway. It's all good. Just keep doing that until you can't breathe anymore, right? But people, most people probably either have one, maybe if they're lucky, two of those circles in the Venn diagram. How do you get all three, Baroness?
Well, sometimes you won't get all three.
Yeah.
I think that's just the reality of it. There's so many things that you have to take into consideration, you know, when it comes to being a photographer, right? So it's about an understanding of how things take shape within the context of a frame in terms of light, shadow, you know, color, line, gesture. And then there's also the ability of being able to recognize all of those things in the real world and thinking of them within the context of the frame. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's someone is a food photographer, or someone is a wildlife photographer, there's sort of an understanding of how the real world translates into a photograph, which is really hard to concept to sort of translate. Mm-hmm. Because despite how easy it is to make a picture, or to take a picture, it's really easy to take a picture, but making the leap to actually making a photograph is sort of a challenging thing, because you have to translate so much in terms of what you're seeing with a naked eye, and think of it in context of a photographic print or an image that you see on the screen. And that only comes from, you know, actively and looking at photographs and developing an understanding of what not only a good photograph looks like, but why it works.
Yeah.
And then being able to apply that knowledge, that information, into your own experience of taking a picture.
Yeah, that reminds me of as we record this, it's April 23rd and 2019. April 22nd, 2019, Tesla and Elon Musk announced that they had introduced a computer into their new cars that does full self-driving now, right? Okay. And the tie-in to this conversation was that one of the people he had on stage, one of the engineers or scientists or whatever, was talking about how they train neural networks to see the world around them, and they were drawing the comparison between how humans see the world around them. Like, we could look at a dog, a certain breed of a dog, and then pick that breed out of a crowd of dogs after seeing one photo, where a neural network can't do that. You have to feed it thousands of photos of that dog in different situations and lighting situations and all that. And I think that feeds back into this conversation about, you know, just learning to be a photographer. Some people are like the human in that scenario, where you could innately see a shot and immediately grok if it's good or bad or what's wrong with it, whereas other people need that 10,000 hours in order to get to that point. And to your point, you're still going to get to that point if you put the 10,000 hours in, if you don't have the natural aptitude, right?
Yeah, but I think that if you have the natural aptitude, or you don't naturally have some aspect of this, I think what happens is not that one becomes necessarily better, but it may be a little faster way of progressing if you do have some of that natural aptitude. Mm-hmm. That it may take someone who lacks a particular aptitude in terms of seeing, it may take them sort of longer to be able to do it. But I don't think that the aptitude alone provides sufficient an advantage that the person with aptitude, you can automatically make the assumption that they're going to be the better photographer.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That does. Yeah. It's the whole thing is interesting, because then we could segue into just developing personal style, right? So there's the idea of aptitude and being good at something technically and, you know, even aesthetically or creatively. But then there's that whole subjective style part of it, you know, and how you develop a personal style. Like, someone could look at a Barry Nex shot and say that, you know, a Barry Nex shot, that looks like something a Barry Nex would shoot, or a Valerie Jardin shot, or whomever, right? You know, those people that are at that level, you can grok immediately who probably did a shot like that or shoots like that. How do people that are watching this get to that level where they're good enough and they've developed the aptitude, and when they create photos, it has their watermark on it automatically without them doing anything?
Well, this exact question is what sort of spurred the idea for the topic, because I've been talking with a variety of people on this whole area. We were talking about the fact that a lot of what we learn as photographers is emulation. You know, mm-hmm. we're looking at other people's photographs, we read about other people's techniques and approaches, and we apply them to our own photographic practice so that we can understand how to light, how to use a wide-angle lens, how to do stuff in Photoshop, and basically honing the technical skills in terms of what takes a picture. And what happens, I think, to a lot of photographers is that they get stuck in the emulation phase. Mm-hmm. They'll become really adept in terms of the technical side of photography, and they may be very good in terms of mimicking or mirroring what they see other photographers do, and they'll just sort of jump around trying different approaches and techniques of other photographers, and that's where they sort of end up.
Yeah.
And that's why you see a lot of photographers everywhere, whether it's Twitter or, you know, Facebook, Instagram, a lot of people who look like so many other photographers.
And, yeah. But isn't that the what camera manufacturers want in a lot of ways? I mean, you know, you see you've got Canon with the Explorers of Light and Nikon Icons of Imaging and Panasonic with, you know, the Ambassadors, all that. So you've got all these companies that hire on very skilled, talented photographers. I would presume so that, you know, people can see, hey, look at the shots that Joe McNally did on Nikon. I want to shoot like Joe McNally. Therefore, I need to buy a Nikon D8 whatever and a bunch of speed lights and go to town so I can shoot like Joe, right? So the company makes their revenue. Is that necessarily the right route for the person to go, though, right? To shoot like Joe? Or do you do that and then at some point fork off into Joe-like photography? And even is that right? I don't know.
Well, I think that it's inevitable for us to do that, because I know for me, I sort of cut my teeth on looking at other people's photographs, trying mm-hmm. to understand how they created those pictures and seeing that my images were falling short of that and trying to sort of understand it. And I would duplicate what I thought other people were doing and sort of adopt it in my own way. But I think that there comes a time where I think one of the problems and why people get stuck there is that they think they have to have this exhaustive knowledge of how photography works. So they feel like they constantly have to be studying all this technique and approach. And there are some amazing photographers who, if you started asking them the technical side, they would just look at you and go, I just take pictures.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
That's why I have an assistant. That's, you know, I don't clutter my mind with that stuff, because I'm more into trying to create my vision into the photograph.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point where style, a personal vision sort of comes into play. At some point you have to put aside trying to learn how someone else does it and try to figure out, okay, now that I have this equipment, now that I have this knowledge, what do I want to say with the camera?
Yeah.
Because people that I'm drawn to you know, invite to the show are not necessarily people who could go to Photoshop World and give you a bunch of technical information on it. Some of them could, some couldn't. But what they're photographing and how they're photographing it is inspirational. They're saying something with the equipment. And I think that there comes a point where the photographer has to decide, okay, I have access to all this. I've put in all these hours, all this training. What do I want to say?
Mm-hmm.
And some people, you know, say they want to do sort of documentary work, and they come back and they say, well, I don't know what kind of story I want to tell. And it's like, well, you have to start there, because there's little point to having a camera, a word processor, anything like that, whatever art you're going to create, if you have no idea what you want to say.
Yeah.
And sometimes what you want to say just has to start close to home. So much of the work that I've seen from photographers, whether it's portrait work, whether it's documentary work, whether it's photojournalism, whether it's fine art, it's always rooted on something that they're passionate about, something that they're angry about, something that they love, something they're just trying to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And they use the camera as a means of being able to sort of explore it and say something about that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily mean that everything has to be high concept, but it requires you to kind of go, all right, I have this tool with me, and I'm able to express something about how I experience and see the world through it, and where do I want to apply it? And if you don't figure that out for yourself, then all you're doing is being, you know, a poor copy of whoever you're trying to emulate.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen. Like, you know, Mary Ellen Mark, famous documentary photographer. Mm-hmm. And she had a particular approach where she would shoot on film. She would use a square format on her medium format camera, and she would use flash. And very distinct style that was very much her. And then I would see other photographers, and I remember I saw one photographer's work. I said, this looks really familiar. And I just looked at his CV, and I saw that he was an assistant of Mary Ellen Mark.
Mm.
And it was like, okay, that's great that you got to study with her. But if I'm looking at your pictures and I'm thinking about another photographer,
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And then you probably failed, right? Because you become sort of an ad for that person, right? You know, and you know, the other negative is you don't want to be, quote, the next something, right? You know, Jane Doe is the next, you know, insert famous photographer's name, because, you know, I hear that whenever people say that about a different person in whatever genre, I think of that as like, that's kind of an insult, right? Because you want to be your own. You don't want to be the next of something else. You know, I'm not going down a road that has already been created. You want to create your own road, right?
You think about Annie Leibovitz, about that big picture that she had during the early, you know, 80s and 90s, all those conceptual portraits of celebrities, right? And there were a whole school of people who followed that. But how many of those people do you remember now?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right? Exactly. Well, segue into this. So you know, there's the, and this is a tough question, right? I don't know, even know if it's answerable, but there's the idea of honing your craft and getting good as a photographer and paying your dues at the beginning and learning the f-stops and shutter speeds, and depending on how old you are, you know, getting fixer and developer in your veins, you know, from being in the dark room and all that. But just learning the craft of photography versus, and put that in one bucket, next bucket is, you know what? I don't care about all that stuff. Like you're saying, I don't care about all that stuff. All I care about is, you know, I'm passionate right now about police violence, right? So I'm a photographer. I'm going to go out and document police violence and the stories that unravel behind that type of thing, or whatever your passion is at the time. You don't know anything about photography, but you know that, like you said, you have a story and a direction that you want to go in. What's the right way to approach this? Is it, you know, let me get better as a photographer first, and then I'm going to go tackle this topic so I can do it justice? Or, you know, this topic has a short shelf life, hopefully, in the case of that one, has a short shelf life. So let me go get in there and then I'll figure it out. I'll begin with the end in mind. I'll get the story done, and I'll figure out how to do the photography along the way. What's your opinion on that?
You know, that latter one is, I've seen countless times.
Yeah.
I've seen people out there who don't necessarily have a complete understanding of the technical side of photography, but they're so impassioned to start making photographs immediately that that's just what they do.
Yeah.
And because they have a really strong idea and concept, that comes across. And even though other people might critique it because it's not technically perfect or it doesn't follow, you know, the sort of expected parameters of what a quote-unquote good photograph is, but they're still able to say something really interesting, powerful, maybe even controversial with their photographs that someone who is very technically proficient isn't doing. I mean, I've seen perfectly constructed, created photographs that I don't feel anything about.
Yeah.
Nothing. I just look at it and I go, okay, good. You got your technique down, but you're not telling me a damn thing.
Instagram, right? That's Instagram.
Well, that's not just Instagram. It's just anything. But yeah. I think about some of the photographers whose work is just amazing. You know, photographers from, you know, the mid 20th century. Photographs that if you put it in front of a lot of photographers today, they would go, it's too grainy, it's out of focus, it's blurred.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, this is W. Eugene Smith.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And all of a sudden it's just like, oh, you know what I mean? And I think getting bogged up in the technical side is a good excuse to not take the kind of risks that you have to take in order to develop your own sense of style and sensibility.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You just get, oh, I don't know enough, and I got to keep learning. And you can spend a lifetime doing that. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get into other groups when they sit down and take a look at photographs. That's what they're debating. Oh, it looks like your image is a little soft in the corners. You could have sharpened this a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Exposure is off by about half a stop. And I hear a discussion like that. I go, well, it doesn't matter what's the photograph's about, because if that's all that they're discussing, you didn't achieve anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They've lost you in the story, right?
Yeah. Because an image, even when it's flawed, if it's conveying something that is, that has resonance with it, it makes up for the flaws. I mean, I've seen photographs that I just love that are slightly out of focus. that are slightly blurred. And I look at those photographs and I just marvel at it because of how that person saw the scene and captured it. And, you know, because Henri Cartier-Bresson, you know, if you had that criteria of the images being perfect, a lot of those images wouldn't pass mustard.
Right.
Today's vernacular. And that's crazy. But if, you know, some people were happy to stay in that place. I'm not one of them. But again, I don't consider myself one of the greatest photographers that it's ever been. I kind of understand what my limitations are, and I know what I need to do in order to get better. And I'm constantly thinking about those things because I'm taking bad pictures all the time, but I'm taking bad pictures in the pursuit of having a variety of different breakthroughs in terms of how I see and how I shoot and why I do it in the first place.
Yeah.
And that, so for me, emulation is not where I want to go. Even, I don't even want to go out and recreate pictures I've already made that I know are good. For me, that's just wasted time. So every time I go out there, I want to come back with at least one photograph that looks unlike something that I would have created the day before, the week before, the year before. That for me is the sort of mentality that I think allows you to discover your unique voice and your talent as a photographer. But it's a scary place to be as well, because you're inviting critique, rejection, people not understanding what you're doing. And if you're not willing to accept that that's sort of the price that you have to take to find your voice, you never will. And and it doesn't mean that you'll become, you know, the greatest photographer of the 21st century, but you'll be the best photographer that you can be, you know, in your lifetime. And that, I think, is something to sort of strive for. Yeah. If something else comes as a consequence of it, whether it's a career as a photographer, whether it's books or a fine art exhibit, that's great, but that has to be sort of secondary to what you're trying to pursue for yourself as an artist. Everything else is just noise.
Yeah, everything else is just noise. And then to wrap this up, how do you get beyond the noise, right? Because there's kind of a trifecta of noise out there. There's the, on the one side, there's back to that Venn diagram, right? On the one side, there's the constant wave of gear. You know, you need the next best camera, you need the next best lights, and this lens is sharper than this lens that you bought 3 years ago. There, you know, all that stuff, and even tripods, everything. It goes down, and people get on that gravy train of, I need this, I gotta have this next thing, right? We're all guilty of it. And then there's, like you mentioned, there's the education side of it as well. You could be, nothing wrong with being a lifelong learner, but you could get on that gravy train of okay, I'm not good enough. I need to take another class. I need to try this. I need to do that, you know, and become a lifelong experimenter and never, ever tell a story. And then there's the third circle, which is storytelling. Like, how do you mix those, right? As a photographer that's, you know, I want to get better, should I just forego the first two? And just say, you know what, there, you know, Baron X is right. I'm gonna dive into story. I have this thing that I'm passionate about, and I'm gonna tell it, even if I have to do it with my iPhone. I'm gonna tell the story, and then, you know, I'll grow from there. What's your advice to people out there that are kind of on one of those two previous gravy trains, either gear or education?
You're gonna have to be incredibly honest with yourself, and realize you're either a consumer or a creator. And if you're a consumer, then you're subscribing to God knows how many YouTube channels to see gear reviews and people open boxes of cameras and seeing other people's photograph. You look at all the everything in a magazine article, all about the technique. You get these, every time you sit down with other photographers, you're just sharing equipment. And you're basically looking at the latest brochures and looking at all the rumor sites, and basically you're consuming. You're not creating anything, you're just consuming. Mm-hmm. And if in a month's time you find that you're putting in more hours consuming content than creating, something's got to change. Yeah. And I think it's just too easy now to consume all this content. And because it's dedicated to photography, we think we're being productive. And because a lot of people complain about not having enough time to go out and shoot and make pictures. And if you're spending that kind of time consuming all that, that's probably a big factor in you not growing as a photographer, because like we said before, you don't need to have all that knowledge, all that skill. I mean, if you understand the shutter speed and the relationship between shutter speed, aperture, and ISO and white balance, and you know how to hold the camera steady, go out and make the goddamn picture.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be good every time, but it's just that you're putting in the time and you're sort of reinforcing the idea that I really love this and I love it even more when I'm doing it, not just watching someone else do it. And, you know, I struggle now with finding the time to photograph, but that's why I'm working on a bunch of personal projects that are accessible to me. I don't have the opportunity to go down and shoot on the street. So I'm doing a documentary project on my mother-in-law who started living with us back in last September.
Uh-huh.
Making images of that dynamic, that, you know, that changing family dynamic. I'm reaching out to friends who have young kids, and I'm documenting their morning, the family's morning routine for like 3 hours on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, sort of, you know, just, and it gives me something to do rather than lamenting the fact that, oh, I can't get out to downtown Los Angeles or to Venice to go out and shoot for 4 or 5 hours on the street. So, but I'm using all those skills that I have as a street photographer for the more documentary work that I'm doing. And I'm finding that that is allowing me to exercise my creative photographic muscle in a way that I wasn't doing on the street. And it's challenging in different ways, but it's also probably more gratifying in ways that a lot of the street photography hasn't been for the last several years. So, you know, so again, you know, find the time, make pictures that really matter to you, and don't be concerned about what other people are going to think about these. Don't worry about whether or not this fits into a particular category of photography. Mm-hmm. Is this street photography? Is this portraiture? Is this acceptable? Is this okay? Is this breaking the rules? Am I allowed to do that? Screw it. If you want to make the picture, do it whatever way that you want to or you need to make the photograph, and don't be burdened by all these, you know, expectations that other people have. And if you have people in your community who look at your pictures and they think you're making a mistake and you're doing something wrong, but you know that this is what you feel impelled to do, find different people who get what you're trying to do.
That's right. That's right.
Because at some point you're going to have to make that choice, because like I said, there's a larger group of people that are in that pool that just want to do a lot of navel gazing. Mm-hmm. And they're happy with that. And they're happy to make a good photograph that looks like someone else's. But if that's not you, and you know, and likely, if you're listening to this show, you probably more so than not, you have to be able to make that kind of hard choice. But it's also the most gratifying thing,
yeah,
that you can do as an artist, because when you see yourself developing in a way that's really personal, that you're doing something that, yeah, I don't recognize this as in other photographers, and you have that moment of self doubt to and think about, is this work valid? And oftentimes, it is very valid. Just the fact you're not seeing it, other people doing this thing, is likely a really good indication that you're doing something that's very unique to you.
Yeah. And even though it's uncomfortable, right?
Even though it's uncomfortable, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. Yeah, it's the other piece that we didn't really touch on is the influence of social media on photographers, right? I.e., shooting for social acceptance versus shooting to tell a story or for some you know, social reason or personal or whatever, right? So shooting, hey, look at this shot. It got 30 likes, and that one got 50. You know, people, I'm going to shoot more of that thing that got 50 likes because I like that. I like the little endorphin rush. Or, you know, the other side of that coin is comparing yourself to others and saying, hey, Barry and X got, you know, 12,000 likes on that shot he did, and I got 12. He's a better photographer, right?
And I heard of Instagram photographers, they'll post an image, and if it didn't get enough likes, they'll take it off their feed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, who are you doing this for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you're doing it for that, that's why you'll see those photographers who are in the Instagram feeds that they'll use that that teal and whatever other color is, you'll see, you can look at the whole feed and mm-hmm. the whole color scheme is exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just go, oh, that's really nice. But I swear to God, I'm not going to keep looking at those guys' feeds, because I'm interested in photographers who are really sort of doing stuff that is different.
Yeah, yeah.
I can understand that to a certain – if you're trying to pursue work and you want to say that you have a unique style or whatever that is, it may make sense for that. But again, it's like, who are you making these pictures for? And who and why are you sharing it with?
Yeah, yeah. This is a deep conversation, man. It was very, very deep. So let's leave it there. We'll probably have to do a part two, or I'll have you on TWIB to talk about this. What if people want to, you know, catch up with you? You're doing workshops and all kinds of stuff now. Like, what's on your plate?
Right now, I'm going to have in DC at the end of May. I'm going to be at the Focus on the Story Photo Festival, which is a photo festival week long that is dedicated to photojournalism, documentary photography, and some street photography. I'm going to be doing a 2-day course there, and I'm also going to be leading a panel about mental health in front and behind the camera. With some amazing photographers. And then in June, I'm doing my 2-day workshop here in Los Angeles through the Los Angeles Center of Photography. And then I'm accepting photographers for a week-long, maybe 10-day excursion in Tokyo, Japan, to George Nabechi Creative. We just opened it up. So that's going to be an amazing experience, because George lives in Japan. He's Japanese. And he's been doing workshops with Sam Abel, Greg Gorman, and Arthur Meyerson. And he asked me to be part of that, you know, part of those pool of photographers that he has. And this is going to be the first full experience in Tokyo, because he's been taking them to other areas of Japan. And because he knows Japan like the back of his hand, it's not just going to be about photography. It's going to be about food. It's going to be about drink. It's going to be about culture. It's really going to give us a much more intimate experience of Tokyo in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Most people may have likely had, even if they've traveled there before. So, and then I may be doing something in Vancouver in August, but we're still working out the details there.
Man, you're all over the place. What's the matter? LA is not nice enough for you?
It's nice enough, but I got to get out sometime.
You got to get out of that heat. All right, man. Verinex Perillo, The Candid Frame. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate having you on. It's going to be a good talk. So you said that's a Focus on the Story, right? I'll link to that in the show notes and in the description for this YouTube video. I'm interested to hear more about the mental health thing that you're doing. We did a couple of shows on mental health that were very positively received on TWIP. So yeah, that's a good tangent to be going down. So yeah, congratulations.
I'd also real quickly like to mention my book, Making Photographs, Developing a Personal Visual Workflow. It's kind of in line with what we were kind of talking about today, but that's out. And if people want to pick up a copy, if they go to the Rocky Nook website, which is the publisher, and they use the code Perello40, that's Perello, numeral F40, mm-hmm. They can get 40% off the list price of the book.
Okay, very cool. It's called Making Photographs, and I'll link to it, and I'll put code in there as well. Cool, man. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, man. Get out there and enjoy that weather a little bit. You know,
I need some sun.
Yeah, you do.
Beautiful cocoa brown look that you have. I look a little pale.
I know. You see, compared to me, you're a couple shades lighter. Just saying. Just saying. You might want to get out there a little bit. All right. Verinex Perillo, man. Take care.
Take care, man.
All right. See ya.
This is TWIP.